Order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, May 14th, 2003, and we will be in work session on House Bill 5054, which is the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission Budget Bill, and House Bill 5055, which is the Teacher Standard and Practice Commission Fee Bill. And I will open the work session on both those bills. Ms. McGlashan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee have a number of papers in front of you, and I think what I'll start out doing is just go through those just to kind of orient you. And you should have a memo from me on LFO memo head, which is the document that I'll be working from during this work session. And then behind that, a more detailed spreadsheet with the specific adjustments in it, showing you how I got from the basically from the governor's recommended budget to the LFO recommended budget. And behind that, when we get into performance measures, there was an additional performance measure that the subcommittee had expressed interest in, and the agency has come forward with some language for that, and so you've got a copy of that, and we'll talk about it more when we get into the performance measure section of this discussion. The agency has provided you with their cash flow on a monthly basis. And again, when we talk about the ending balance review, we can talk more about their cash flow document. And then finally, during the hearing some months ago, there was a request for information on complaints and disciplinary actions, and the agency has provided you quite a lengthy and large document with a lot of detail on that issue. And if you like, we can talk about that more, or perhaps you'd just like to take it back to your office after the work session and take a look at it.
Okay. To begin with, is there any discussion around the spreadsheet that relates to the complaints and the dispensation of the complaints?
Is this public is this spreadsheet public information?
This is scary.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Teacher Standards and Practices. Yes, it's public information, but the information that's not public information, we took the names off. So, for example, The rule is if somebody called in to see if I were a teacher and someone had filed a complaint against me, and the commission had investigated the complaint, and the commission had found the complaint was unfounded and it was dismissed, we would tell somebody, yes, a complaint was filed, but it was dismissed. So that's all the blanks. Those are the cases that were investigated and found to not have enough evidence or were dismissed for other reasons, and so we protect the anonymity of the complainant, and none of the investigation information is considered public record.
Madam Chair.
Representative Martin.
Just a clarification. NFA on the top of your sheet?
No further action.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
I imagine you receive a lot of complaints all the time, many of which are found not to be significant or not to be to be unfounded. So the blanks would probably be pending cases, I would assume.
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, the blanks are completed cases. They're completed actions. They're completed investigations. They are our statute requires that we investigate to some degree every single complaint. There have been a few that have come in since I've been here that I'd say, this is so frivolous, I hate to even spend the money on it, but we have to have an investigation. And there's no authority in our office to act on a complaint. Have to take it to the commission and say, here's the investigation, here's what we found, we believe it's totally unfounded, and then the commission, all 17 of them, decide whether they agree with us or not. And occasionally they say, well, you know, it doesn't feel quite that simple, go back and look for more. The I guess I will point out to you that The records end on the very back page, on page 20, at 664. There are over 100 other pending cases right now that are in various stages of either investigation or potential negotiations for settlement, and that we didn't include.
And to, Madam Chair, to read this properly, we should go way over, and this column says surrender or privilege, and then mm-hmm. back that over the other direction to see if we've really got a situation. I mean, mm-hmm. reading this, some of this has been, is found to be not substantiated. Is that correct?
Correct. So let me assist here. We have the, as you can see, the school district and who complained, the license type, the date the commission made the final action recommendation, and then NFA's no further action. It may have been dismissed. We may have a certain type of order. For example, if they never ever respond, we'll take a default order. And then the next are the various types of disciplines that can happen. Public reprimand, probation, suspension, revocation, mandatory revocation, which are those serious crimes involving usually students or other heinous things, and or that we may deny issuance on the face based on fingerprint reports, or another state may let us know that they've disciplined on a license. And then the final two are just if we've reinstated them and what statutes or rules we relied upon.
Question?
Representative Smith.
Under order type, what does stipulation mean?
Stipulation means that the person who is being charged with having violated an ethical rule or maybe even a criminal rule has agreed to negotiate with the commission what their settlement would be. And they sign the order before the commission reviews it.
Representative Messerly, do you have any questions or comments?
Not at this point. No, thank you.
Okay. If in perusing the document further, if the members have more questions, they could contact the director directly, or if we have time at the end of the session today, we could come back to this if members request. Ms. LaFlasche.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair and subcommittee members, if I could direct your attention to the memorandum. I'll just start walking you through that, and we'll do the budget bill first and the fee bill last. So for House Bill 5054, there's a summary there that shows you just some historical data for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission's budget, and just to point out that the 2003-05 governor's recommended budget for the agency is $3,861,514.21 FTE, and this is a 13.4% increase from the 0103 legislatively approved budget. The LFO recommended budget is $3,656,147 other funds and 20 FTE, and this represents a 7.4% increase over the 0103 legislatively approved budget and a 5.3% decrease from the governor's budget. I'll walk you through that next section on the LFO detailed budget recommendations. The first set of recommendations are the standard ones that all agencies will be getting, and those include the employee compensation increase adjustment, vacant position elimination adjustment, inflation, AG rate reduction, and DAS assessment reduction. The first package, 001, is simply a reduction in the agency's budget to recognize that there will be no merit increases in the budgets. So that reduces the budget by $28,656 other, excuse me, $28,656 other funds. And Madam Chair, I don't know if you want to have a approval of each individual package or if you just want me to walk through everything.
Let's walk through and then we'll talk about all of these. And committee members, this is in a different format than we've looked at in the other budgets, the commission budgets that we've done. So if you have any questions as we go through these, don't hesitate to ask.
Package 002 is the vacant position elimination, and I'm not recommending that any vacant, actually there's only one, I'm not recommending that that position be eliminated. That's the coordinator of teacher licensing, and I think given that the agency's highest priority is their licensure program, that that's a critical position for them to carry out their activities. However, they have experienced some savings from filling a previous vacant position at a lower cost than budgeted. And then I'm also recommending that this vacant position be carried forward at a lower cost than budgeted. So that results in a reduction in their budget of $62,160 other funds. Package 003 is simply the standard adjustment for removing inflation, except for facilities rental, the AG rate, which is adjusted in a separate package, and the state government service charges, again, adjusted in a separate package. So the inflation adjustment reduces their budget by $15,468 other funds. Package 004 is the Attorney General rate reduction, which reflects the reduction in the hourly rate from $109 to $98, and that reduces their budget by $22,938 other funds. And finally, the DAS assessment reduction reduces their budget by $1,565 other funds.
Are there any questions or comments?
So then if you
I want to ask you.
No, but we have the could we have the director come forward? Representative Bates has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have employees who are in the public unions?
None of our employees are represented.
And nobody in the department that you work with is represented at all then?
Correct.
That's the question. Thank you.
Any further questions or comments on the standard reductions? Again, slightly different format, but same kind of information that we've been seeing. Are there any objections to the standard reductions? Let's move ahead and talk about the policy.
If you'll turn to page 2, then that next table goes over the policy option packages that are included in the agency's budget. And the first package represents a reduction in their limitation due to savings from the use of scanning versus microfilming, and also from replacing some contracted services with an information system position in policy option package 102. So those two packages are somewhat tied together. And if you'll permit me, Madam Chair, I'll drop down and describe 102 because I think, since they're related, my recommendation on 090 will make more sense if I tell you what's going on in 102. Policy option package 102 would, in the governor's budget, would have added an information specialist one and also reclassify an existing information specialist position to improve online services to customers and also address the internal licensing process. And the savings in the governor's budget in 090 were predicated on adding the new information specialist position in 102. The agency has come forward with a new proposal for 102. They believe that they no longer need that new information specialist 2 position, and so they're not asking for that any longer. So what I've done with 090 is recognize that they may still need some contracted services because they're not getting that new information specialist position. So rather than reduce their budget by $70,000 in policy option package 090, I would recommend that you only reduce it by $40,000 other funds, still recognizing the savings from doing the scanning versus the microfilming, but adding back $30,000 to allow them to still contract for needed services since they'll have fewer information technology staff to do those activities. And then I'll just tell you on package 102, the amount of $80,823 $3 other funds recognizes that they would no longer get that information specialist. One, it also gives them the reclassification of the existing position at a slightly lower level than what they were asking for. It takes out some merit funding. So between those two packages, I would recommend that you approve 090 at a level of $40,000 other funds reduction, and then 102 at $80,823 other funds.
Let's take a little breather there. Does anyone have questions or wish to discuss those two policy packages? My understanding is that the agency has worked with you on these and is in agreement with them.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
I want to say, too, that I have not had the experience of dealing with this agency in previous sessions, but I am very encouraged with the direction that the agency is going in now and the management, and it isn't often or it isn't lightly that I'm willing to approve new positions, but I do think that in this case they're warranted and they'll be well used.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
The last session, there were some, when I was on Ways and Means Education, there were some issues with this department. And I made some recommendations. And then they were finally carried out with the new director. The new director walking in and seeing what some of the situations were and actually did one of my recommendations after reviewing the tape of our meetings last session. And so I know that teachers are able to access information in a more timely manner and more in keeping with teachers' hours and not bankers' hours, so to speak. And so I'm fairly happy and excited the way the department seems to be heading in a very short period of time. A lot of times it's hard to turn around a Titanic, so to speak, but I think they're on their way, and I expect better things from them in the future.
Further comments? Representative Bates, do you have anything? I'll have Ms. McGlashan go through policy package 101 and 103 because they all add capacity in the agency.
Okay. Madam Chair, and then back to policy option package 101. That's what's called the public service improvement package. And that would add two new positions, 1.5 FTE, and increase an existing position by 0.5 FTE to improve services to customers, telephone services, email response time, and also to address clerical workload demands. And it also responds to a Secretary of State's Audits Division report regarding separation of duties with things like cash handling. And the subcommittee had discussed during the public hearings whether or not the agency could have these be limited duration positions, and I believe the answer was yes, they could. And so I'm recommending that you approve the amount of limitation in the package, but establish the two new positions as limited duration. As you know, the agency is doing a lot of work with technology, and things are changing for them, and I think it's a good use of limited duration positions to see what they can do in terms of using technology to meet customer service demands, and then we can review these positions the next time around and see if they need to actually continue as permanent positions.
Okay. Should we go on to Package 103?
And Package 103 includes the addition of an investigator position at halftime 0.5 FTE and also reclassification of the existing investigator position to address the increased workload related to disciplinary cases. And the amount in the governor's budget is $69,351 other funds. What I'm recommending is that you approve the package, but at a funding level of $55,388 other funds. This does a couple of things. It recognizes that the existing investigator is working some overtime, and with the addition of the halftime position, that shouldn't be necessary. So it removes about $9,900 in overtime. And it also allows for the reclassification, but at a lower step than what's in the governor's budget.
And again, you've discussed these with the agency, and the agency is agreeing to them.
Yes.
Are there any questions or comments on any of these policy option packages and recommendations? Are there any objections?
Ma'am, just a quick question to the director, if I could.
Yes. You might as well just stay.
You might as well stay up here. I would tell you that my quick perusal of this has been enlightening. Thank you for presenting it to us.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we would have had that available to us earlier, but I appreciate you getting it to us. The policy packages we're looking at, are they adequate for doing the job you really need to do? Well, this appears to be, as much as anything, a public safety situation. We're putting children and students at risk with the people they trust most in our society, that's teachers. And admittedly, you've got a very few number here compared to the vast number of teachers out here who are doing a wonderful job for us. But those few, you know, rotten apples can really ruin the whole thing for us. Do you have the manpower to take care of this job?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I believe we do. I think the proposal is a reasonable way to go in this type of budget climate. What we're planning to do is hire a full-time for 1 year and see if the workload justifies what we expect it will. That'll reduce the existing investigators over time, and they'll be able to expedite the amount of time it takes us to investigate cases, because one person can only do so much. Then come back with credible evidence about how much more quickly we're able to process cases and move things and handle the workload, and ask the e-board for a limitation for the final year. And if we don't have the evidence for it, then we won't be back. But it will be easier to hire a full-time person, letting them know it would be contingent on whatever we discover in spreading out the workload. And we believe that we will be able to keep an investigator busy full-time for a year and be able to project out, because it seems like with public awareness, the complaints are increasing, mm-hmm. which is a good thing for students and children. And with this position, we'll be able to handle it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I seem to remember during our first discussions with you that outreach to the public was going to be a major step that you were going to try to take. Most of the public is not aware that you even exist, and most of your information probably comes through the superintendents or the districts, although I did notice a few of these were from newspaper articles, which makes me wonder if I'm reading this correctly. Reported by, somebody picked up a newspaper article, so newspapers are picking it up before superintendents do in some cases. There may be unfounded allegations again, but I would hope that you'll continue to reach out to the public and let them know you're available so these things can come forward.
Yes, reaching out to the public on discipline cases is one of our performance indicators we incorporated into our links as really essential. That should have a ripple effect also, hopefully.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further comments, Representative Messerly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a topic I think we could probably spend a day or two on. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, as you know, interested, I guess, in the fact that there's such a wide range of types of complaints. And reading over that, are you able to draw any conclusions as to whether school districts are doing their job and their policies and of how to manage some of their, or educating, or making some of their teachers aware of some of the issues that they should be very careful about, or do we have adequate laws? Are you seeing anything pop up that somebody needs to do some work on this so that people understand the seriousness of what they're doing, maybe?
I think that one idea that occurred to me, Senator Messerly, is that it would be helpful to get into the administrator preparation programs before, as our new administrators are being trained, and have a section on what working with TSPC on these issues means, would be a much more effective way, at least today, to reach folks, and may save some time. I would say, just based on the 1 year I've been there, that most administrators are extremely conscientious about reporting things that for them merit reporting. It's that whole gray area, what should they report? very difficult line to draw. I had an administrator call me this week because he had discovered that two of his teachers had misused cell phone time. The cell phone company had given them free phones with 200 free hours to use for school business, school activities. And the district admitted they didn't have a policy and didn't instruct them when they handed over the phones, but they audited the cell phone records and discovered the personal use. Well, the district demanded and received restitution for the personal calls, but then the administrator was in the position, do I report that to TSPC? I sort of feel like it's been handled. They made a policy. He has to report it. We don't have a real firm, bright line issue. So the administrator's protected by reporting it. He reports that everything he did, that they now have a policy, that they'll continue to audit all the lessons they learned, and it's highly likely the commission will recommend no further action unless some odd thing pops up, like you discover that this isn't the first time those educators have done something kind of unusual, et cetera. So it's really, and that's what I think administrators struggle with. Do we report it or don't we? And as I mentioned before, once they report it, we have to investigate it, which means we have to invest resources. So, and actually, it's in the investigation that you can tell fairly quickly is this is going to wrap up quickly. Oh, there's a lot more to this. So, did that answer your question at all?
That's a pretty broad question.
A pretty broad answer. I think as I learn things, I will help administrators understand it the way I understand it. But I do believe that society and colleagues and administrators aren't tolerating from educators what they may have tolerated in the past because it reflects on everybody. And that the commission is extremely tough on violators because it reflects back on them and they who are good educators and have worked hard and just like the rest of us. Don't want our reputations affected by the few bad apples.
Follow-up, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to describe a situation that I experienced when I was on the Coquille School Board. We had a superintendent who was just very careful that everything was absolutely proper, and he went through every teacher and went through all their credits for advancement and found some lack of reporting, some of those kind of things, which you would expect. But we actually found one member who was getting credits to move up on the salary scale and had taken a course one summer, and then the next summer went back and took the course again, but as an assistant to the instructor. But he got double credits for it and actually moved on the salary scale. Is there any way that your office tracks those kind of things, or is it really entirely up to the school district to scrutinize those records and make sure that it was really basically blind luck, I think, that they were able to pick it up and realize that this was the same course?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, there wouldn't be any way for us to track that. Unless a educator is going to use their post graduation credits to do something with licensure, they don't even have to report them to us, which is going to be an issue with No Child Left Behind. We're going to have to start collecting work that folks have done after they got their license. But after the administration discovers an error like that, the administration can report it's fraud. I mean, it's essentially fraud. And then the decision would be so what does that mean? It probably, I mean, just on the face of it, sounds like a public reprimand. Shame on you. You should have known better. Most of us do type of issue. But that would be where we would step in. And the beauty of discipline is it is a pretty good deterrent. It becomes public, and it may deter people who may be wishing to or thinking about doing something irresponsible.
Thank you.
Are there questions or comments? Are there any objections to any of the policy packages? Ms. LaGuardia, you might have a budget discussion.
Madam Chair, we do. I just did want to add on policy option package 103, just to clarify, although I called that a halftime position because it is 0.5 FTE, but I had discussed with the agency their plans to bring on the position at full time for a year and then come to the e-board if they needed to. So I just wanted to let you and the subcommittee members know that we did have that conversation.
I think that's a good solution. And then take a look at the issue when you have some data collected. We have a conceptual budget note that we need to discuss.
We do, Madam Chair and subcommittee members. The budget note would read as follows. The Teacher Standards and Practices Commission shall report to the next Legislative Assembly on the development of a strategy that strengthens the certification requirements for teacher licensure. The report shall include the costs for requiring and implementing demonstration of competency teaching reading and demonstration of competency teaching math for licensure of a teacher in grades K through 8. And I just should let you know that the budget note has not yet been approved by the co-chairs, so it would be a conceptual budget note, which we would then run by them, get their approval, and if so approved, it would wind up in the budget report by the time this budget goes to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Discussion on the budget note. Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I would just like to thank Vicki Chamberlain from the Commission for working with me on language for this budget note, which again is another reflection of the quality of leadership that is being provided in this agency at this time, and I'm most appreciative of that.
Further discussion on the conceptual budget note? Is there any objection to the conceptual budget note? Okay. Are we ready for...
Madam Chair, whatever your preference is, the next item I have on there would be the recommended vote amendments.
Let's go ahead and do that, okay. And then we'll do a motion.
And that is to amend House Bill 5054 on line 6 of the bill by deleting $3,861,514, which is the level in the governor's budget and in the printed bill, and inserting $3,656,147, which is the LFO recommended budget level for this agency.
And then would we also need to include in that motion the conceptual amendment?
Madam Chair, we could do that.
Budget, no.
We could do that separately if you like, or we can do one motion if you like.
Branch of anger.
Yeah.
Chair will accept a motion to amend House Bill 5054 on line 6 by deleting $3,861,514 and inserting $3,656,147 and adding the conceptual budget note. Is there anyone who wants to make motion?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley moves. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. We have a discussion on performance measures.
Correct, Madam Chair. I don't know if you all have your binders in front of you, but on pages 19 through 24 of the agency's budget document are the performance measures. And during the public hearings, the subcommittee had indicated some interest in modification to a few of the measures, and they are as follows. The first one, 584-1, there was some interest in including a measurement other than an average percent of program standards met by institutions of higher education. And Madam Chair, I would recommend that we have the executive director come up and talk to you more about that and what that might entail. 580. Do you want to do that first before I go on to the other one?
Let's take them in order.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain for the record. We actually spent almost more time on this than any other issue when we talked about the budget here recently. The thing I understand more today than I did when I was here with you in February is that depending on the size of the university and the programs that they offer, the numbers of standards we would be evaluating would vary greatly. So University of Oregon, which has huge programs with administrator preparation and teachers and counselors and school psychologists, would have a huge set of standards for each one of those programs, whereas a very tiny college like Cascade may only have about 20. So getting our arms around how do you compare is very difficult. And so my proposal was that if you were a small college and there were 20 standards we were evaluating, we'd like to see a 95% excellent performance on those standards rate. So it would be 95% no matter how much you offer, that you'd be meeting your standards at that. And I think that's what's difficult to understand in this measure. So what I'm hoping you will agree is that we can go back and work with Jeff Tryons on something that maybe is easier to understand and easier to measure and is more reflective of our budget measures.
Discussion on the performance measures overall?
No, just this particular one.
Okay.
You're fine?
I am.
Okay. Everybody okay with this one? Let's move ahead.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, then in 3B, it indicates modification to 584-11 to add the number of attendees at discipline-related workshops.
Would you like to discuss that one at all?
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe that the goal here is to reach more educators with information. May or may not be through workshops. It may be improving our web page, and it may be taking advantage of opportunities we haven't taken advantage of before. Again, another one we want to take a look at. It's very concrete to say that you had this many attendees. What I would come back and rewrite it would say, we talked to this many future administrators in these programs. We went to the COSA conference and reached this many administrators. We were at an OEA event and reached this many educators, and try to recouch that one as well.
Comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Are we talking here about mandated workshops or workshops that are voluntary? Participation is voluntary.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, we're talking about workshops that haven't existed in the past that we would create. Mm. And so when I was initially putting this together, that seemed like a great idea, but it has evolved into it's really looking for the opportunities we haven't taken advantage of in the past to reach folks, I think, more than just saying we're going to go have a workshop.
Senator Messervy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you confirm attendees? Is that they registered for the workshop or they actually attended the meetings?
Well, if it would be something we set up and provided, it would be attendees, because that would be real.
Now, Madam Chairman, let me explain also from my experience on the school board. We had some issues we had to deal with where people were signing up for workshops and getting paid to go to the workshop, but we found out they were not attending the conferences or very few of the meetings. And so that's why I asked the question.
Well, that sounds like theft. one of the things that sort of has required all of us agencies to take a new look as we made these goals and to do things in the way that we usually would do things. And then the governor said no more state conferences or meetings and things, which is fine. You just have to rethink where you make your opportunities. And so for me, it's not about enrollment or doing that. It's about reaching the numbers. And and we're going to have to proactively call people and say, you know, the COSA conference is coming up and several hundred administrators come, and may we do this instead of waiting to be invited.
Thank you.
Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, performance measurement is obviously sort of beginning a new era here, and I suspect that we're going to struggle with some of these. When you have a subject such as discipline, unless there's a requirement for teachers or administrators or whomever to have continuing education in that requirement, it's very difficult to measure their success and such. And you are probably not the only source of delivery either. I mean, they may go to another workshop in another state or whatever and get some of the similar information. But so I think this isn't a bad start, but I think as you get into it, you'll probably evolve into a better measurement than merely counting. Merely counting is sort of the bottom rung of the performance measurement. It doesn't show success. It doesn't show how many people actually achieved learning by attending. And then it gets to the point of, well, one did they attend? And probably if you're giving the workshop, you could at least count how many. But then secondly, did they actually get it? Mm-hmm. And that's the harder and maybe more successful measurement. And if there's as you go through this process, I would say that would be the goal to work towards, is some way of gauging, understanding or testing that they understood the material that was being presented. And so that will evolve, I think, as we evolve in performance measurement.
Madam Chair, if I may respond.
Yes.
There's a great response in some ways. I'm discovering that there's quite a sensitivity with the working educator workforce in terms of adding workload, and I understand that completely. Professional development is a new concept, relatively two sessions old in terms of rolling out. And when I suggested that we add a mandate, for example, not a mandate, but that as part of your requirements, if you have to get 150 hours, let's say that 10 hours has to be in cultural competency, was a suggestion I made. Well, there was a bristling in it because it was another requirement being added onto the otherwise load. And I could see why it would be viewed that way. So part of it will be a matter of education. There are incentives. I suggested giving two credits for one for cultural competency workshops, let's say. But as I explained to them, as a member of the bar, every 3 years I have to have 45 hours, and I have to have 6 hours of ethics and 1 hour of child abuse every 3 years. I hate having to go find the ethics class, but I'll tell you what it makes me think about every single time is that I'm required to operate in an ethical and honest manner. I mean, so if it doesn't do anything else, it reminds me that there's a high expectation for ethical behavior. And so in treating teaching as a profession, we will move in those directions, and people will understand there's a benefit in protecting your license by being aware of ethical ways to behave. So we have work to do.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We have one more. Two more. Let's proceed.
Okay. The next one, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, is that item 3C, which pertains to performance measure number 584-12, and there was interest. That one has to do with the number of newsletters and articles related to discipline published on the web annually, and there was interest in including the number of hits to the website when that performance measure was discussed.
Excellent. Okay. Let's go ahead to the addition.
The new one. And then, Madam Chair and members, as I mentioned earlier, I distributed something that the agency had prepared in response to some interest in having a new measure regarding the development of culturally competent educators. And if you all have that in front of you, the goal would be to develop cultural competency action plans for educator preparation and licensure renewal, and the executive director is prepared to discuss that further.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, at the commission meeting last week, I proposed a cultural competency action plan as a blueprint, and among the issues that we would look at is whether or not the competencies that we have related to diversity and cultural competency really accomplish what the competencies they're supposed to accomplish, and the only way to do that is to see how they're measured and see what we believe folks know, as Representative March was pointing out when they come out. Reevaluating our civil rights workshops, which were started in the late 60s, bringing them in, retooling them, and requiring people to have them reapproved with more current law and with the incorporation of cultural competency, adding to our agency goals as we have here, which I'd like to make one comment about. The role in professional development, as I was mentioning a minute ago, and the role in alternative assessment, which has become a very, very tricky issue now with No Child Left Behind. We know positively that our objective tests are closing doors to diverse teachers. There's just, it's beyond anecdotal. There's objective evidence that they do not pass at very high rates underrepresented applicants. No Child Left Behind says that new teachers have to pass a rigorous state test. So the challenge will be finding an assessment that's fair and allows people into the profession, maintaining the standards of the profession, and having it pass muster as a rigorous state test. It's doable. It's just not as easy as it would have been.
Representative Smith.
Let me see if I understood what you said. You said culturally diverse people have trouble passing a test.
There's not just a test. The test that I'm thinking of specifically is the multiple subjects test for elementary education and middle level education has a much lower passage rate among our cultural groups than it does among the majority population.
Follow up. What that says to me is that when teachers are coming out of college and they're educated at the college level to become teachers, they're not getting adequate instruction.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, it may mean that. There is a lot of research that, depending on how a question is asked and the culture you come from, you may have a different answer. While ETS, which is the owner of that test, says that they have tested it for those types of biases, we just still know there isn't a great test. I think the answer is there isn't just one test. There has to be a variety of tests. And it may or may not have to do with preparation, or it may have to do with how the test is designed, and it may not be the best measure.
So are you looking at different tests?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, we are.
Is there a test out there that gets rid of this bias?
I don't know the answer to that.
And how do you find that out?
You go and look at where the test has been administered in other states, and ETS runs this awesome summary that breaks down the test applicants demographically by self-identification and shows the performance rate on the test. So, for example, if California is using a different test we're looking at, I would go to California and ask to look at their summary results.
Right.
They're totally anonymous, and see if there's a difference. And I think that's the most credible way to do it and responsible way to do it.
Well, I'd just like to make a comment. I'm concerned about how our teachers are being educated, and we keep adding requirements on them after their bachelor's requirement, and then we require them to have a master's degree. I still maintain, until the day I no longer serve in this body, that I do not think a master's degree requirement is necessary to teach if it's done properly at the master's degree level. And I'm now suspect even more, from a little bit of this anecdotal evidence, that maybe we're not doing a good job at the baccalaureate level. You know, I think if we're going to educate teachers to be teachers, we need to teach them maybe differently than the biology major or the English major. And I'm not sure that's being done at the real low levels.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I'm not ready to indict institutions yet. I don't know enough about the test. I do know we need to have elementary teachers who have a broad range of subject matter competency.
Sure.
And I'm not convinced it's that great a test. So right. So a bad test could make an institution look bad.
Sure.
And I think the test is how our students are performing ultimately in the content areas. And if we're doing poorly, we know teaching is a serious factor, our students. It's not a simple equation.
Madam Chair, I'm going to try to couch these comments very carefully. And if I misspeak, I reserve the right to reverse myself. Cultural background is extremely important in how students are taught and who that teacher is. The test that we usually commonly think of for testing teachers have a racial background to them that is not from the minority population. I spent five or six years living in inner city Detroit, and it was a revelation to me how differently the same question could be answered in a group of people of different ethnic and racial backgrounds, and how difficult it is to communicate some very simple things to each other, whether it's on a basketball court or other places, which is where I had most of my interaction was on a basketball court. And we frankly couldn't communicate with each other, even though we're both using English at times and we're friends. You know, and the question to me would be, what the heck are you talking about, or words to that effect, and what the heck are you talking about, words to that effect. And we would take time to figure out what we're saying to each other. A written test is extremely difficult for people of some ethnic and racial background to get an objective look at their ability to teach. And we need those people in those schools to teach kids who will understand them also. Because if you come into a classroom with a different cultural background than the students you're trying to teach, you cannot communicate with them. I don't think this is about lowering the standard for teachers.
Right.
I think it's a problem with the test.
Right. Right.
And no one has developed a test that really touches that well for us. So I appreciate your thoughts on it. And I don't think it's necessarily a problem with the schools, what they're teaching. What they have to do is recruit more people of those backgrounds. And if you really want to teach in an area of a different culture than you are, you have to go in and student teach and have an education in that culture, which takes years. You're not going to get it from a four-year baccalaureate program. And so my overall sense is you need to change the test. You need to bring in more people who have ethnic cultural differences than what we commonly see in the state, and you need to get those people back out in the schools teaching those elementary kids.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I also like to remind people it's not always about ethnicity. That I could have the exact difficulties you experienced communicating with someone from the Deep South who is exactly the same racial makeup I am. Our culture is where we come from, and we're so diverse in this United States. That's why I'm convinced today there isn't a test. We have to have a variety of ways to people to demonstrate competency. And that's actually one of the new beauties of No Child Left Behind. It's forced us to look at competency in a new way. So I didn't think I'd be here saying there's great things in it, but there are good things.
Well, and just a comment from me that I am somewhat skeptical of the ability of a competency test to gauge the success of a teacher before they've actually gotten into the classroom. And that's why Senator Gordley's conceptual budget note that will hopefully move us in a direction where we'll put them in an actual situation and then gauge their competency off of the impact that they have on student learning rather than on this theoretical knowledge and this ability to answer questions within a range that is found to be acceptable, I think is a much more worthwhile place to go in gauging teachers' competency.
Madam Chair, when I was in this committee last time, Senator Messerly asked, how do you motivate teachers or how do you teach teachers to be motivated? And there isn't a good answer. But what's occurred to me since then is that we came in and made a report on the minority teacher report. There's a tremendous dropout in the profession in the first 5 years, and everybody goes, woe is me. Part of it might be the culture of the schools. A lot of it's probably a very good thing. People go into education and think they want to be teachers, and they get in the classroom and discover this is not where they want to be or need to be. And I say more power to them, and if they know they should move on, they probably aren't and haven't been good teachers. And so it's a different situation, in my opinion. I think retention is an important thing we cannot overlook. But it's just, I've said this once before, I thought I was going to love being a hotshot lawyer, and I don't like private practice. But I love all the other things about my profession. So you just kind of, I guess, figure out where you belong. And motivation is absolutely essential.
Madam Chair, Senator Gore.
I'm reminded through this discussion that the legislature is a place of, you know, making policy. It's an incremental process. And to look at this key performance measure and the words finally on paper, I will tell you that I am so pleased. This has been a 10-year effort.
Wow.
In this process to get an acknowledgement of the need to do this. We have attempted legislation. I was prepared to do a budget note in past sessions. Budget notes have been rejected. But we now have leadership at the commission and a commission that recognizes that in order to move the profession forward, this is work we must do. And I commend you. I applaud your leadership. And again, if it's a key performance measure, that says to me we're going to do the work. Thank you.
You're welcome. I just in closing, Madam Chair, it's blank because I'd like to work with Jeff Tryons on how do we measure this. So we just didn't have time to get with him.
Well, and I'm sure that as we move through the action plan development, that will be a discussion that will be taken up by this whatever committee oversees the agency in the interim, and then in the next session also. And I would hope that as the action plan is developed, that there will be a series of performance measures that are based on putting that into play.
Great.
The further comments, any other comments on the performance measures and the additions and the modifications? The chair will accept a do you want to talk about your recommendation before I...
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, LFO recommends that you adopt the performance measures as modified with direction to the agency to work with, and I'm told that it's probably going to be called the Performance Measure Review Committee. On the modification of performance measure number 584-1 and the development of the new performance measure as noted in item 3D above, although I would note that it's probably not necessary to specifically give the agency direction because I think, as you've heard, they're going to do this.
The chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation to adopt the performance measures as modified with direction to the agency to work on the to work with the Performance Measure Review Committee on modifications as laid out in the LFO recommendation.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Now we have a discussion of the ending balance.
Correct. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next item is the ending balance review. And this is when we can get into the cash flow spreadsheet that the agency has provided. As you'll probably recall, the agency's budget is dependent upon a fee increase. My memo says see below. I probably should say see next page. With this increase, with the fee increase, the governor's budget would allow for an ending balance of about 2 months of operating expenditures. The LFO recommended budget level would allow for an ending balance of about 4 months worth of expenditures. And as I'm sure you've heard on other budgets, a prudent ending balance is about 3 to 6 months of expenditures. Can depend on the agency, however. I believe their level of operational reserves provided by the LFO recommended budget is appropriate, and I also recommend that this balance be retained by this agency. And Madam Chair, if you wanted to look at the cash flow spreadsheet, we can do that. What they've provided for you on that first page is the actuals for 0103 with some projections for the rest of the biennium. And then for 0304, the next section is projected at the governor's budget level. And then on the second page, you can see 0305 at the LFO recommended level. And then what they've done is they've projected 0506 using some assumptions in the increase in revenues and expenditures through 0507. And you can see by 0507, they are very low in terms of their operating reserves, if you assume a certain level of revenue growth and a certain level of inflation in the expenditures. And it's quite likely that they may be looking at another fee increase in about 4 years. We could talk about that now or when we get into the fee bill more, but the fee increase is actually a very modest increase from $60 to $75. It is not an annual increase because the licenses, as I understand it, span anywhere from 3 to 5 years. So you're looking about a $3 to $5 annual increase. So just to let you know that they may be looking at another increase in about.
Senator Messer?
Well, I didn't mean to butt in, Madam Chair, but I just wanted to clarify, make sure I'm reading this right, that this department, they're low. Ending balance for the year consistently is in the end of June. Is that right? Whereas some of our departments have other months throughout the year that are the lowest.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, that looks to be the case here because they do, as you pointed out, Senator Messerly, in June they are low, but then when you go to the next year, it starts to build back up.
Further questions, Senator?
No, that's all. Thank you.
Any other questions on the cash flow and the ending balance issue, Representative Bates?
Madam Chair, if this group decides in a year that they need extra FTE to deal with the problems we've been discussing, does the E-Board have the right to allow them to lift the limitation and increase their licensure fees?
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, the emergency board would be able to increase their expenditure limitation. The agency could administratively increase its fees, and then it would have to come back to the next legislative assembly to get those ratified to be able to continue the higher level of fees.
Thank you.
Any other questions about the cash flow spreadsheet or the ending balance review? Does anyone have objections to the LFO recommended ending balance issues? Okay. Let's go ahead then, and I will do you want to do a motion to move this to full?
Madam Chair, that would be my recommendation.
Chair would accept a motion to move House Bill 5054 to full Ways and Means as amended with a do pass recommendation. So moved. Stereo motions again from Senator Gorby and Representative Smith. The motion has been doubly moved. So is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objections, the motion is approved. Now let's move on to the fee bill. I think I'll do that after the fee bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, again, the budget is dependent upon a fee increase, again, from $60 to $75 for in-state applicants and renewals. And LFO recommends that you approve House Bill 5055 for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, even after the LFO recommendations for budget reductions. I believe this fee increase is necessary, and it's, as I said before, I believe a modest increase.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendation? Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation and move House Bill 5055 to full Ways and Means with the do pass recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Smith makes the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative March.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that teachers are on this commission, and they're willing to step up and pay slightly more to help police their own agency, and I think that's a good thing, that they recognize the need of increasing professionalism and a discipline in their agency.
Well, and I think you make an excellent point, Representative March, in that we should acknowledge the teaching profession's willingness to have these things be put in place. Further comments on the motion? Is there any objections to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. What I would ask is, Senator Gordley, would you consent to carry both of these bills on the Senate floor?
Yes, thank you.
And Representative Smith, would you consent to carry
Certainly.
Them both in full and on the House floor?
I would.
Thank you.
I kind of liked it the other way around the way the other day, but...
Hey, man.
This is not as fun as
would you like to step to the plate here?
No,
well,
I don't
he can't have
I thinking,
this one.
I was thinking her, you know, I was thinking that the senator here at the House and the representative here in the Senate.
Oh, no, I got that straight.
Am I glad to see that?
You know,
I think these complex things through. Is there any more business before this committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
You know, I do have a question. Looking again at the spreadsheet that you gave us.
Forward?
And the question goes to the consistency in practice in how districts handle the complaints. I'm looking at the bottom of the first page, and I'm seeing two separate cases of falsifying an application for licensure, one in Portland, one in Molalla River. And in one case, it resulted in a suspension, 1 month suspension. And then in the other case, it looks like there was a revocation of the license. Am I reading that correctly?
I'm not seeing exactly what you're looking at, but you are reading it correctly.
It's lines 31 and 32.
Oh, I see.
And I'm just wondering, in the case of where the person received a one-month suspension, why would we keep a person rather than fire them, since this goes to the issue of character and integrity? And
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, these are some of the most fascinating cases I see. What happens is that somebody as a youth may get a minor in possession, and then they may have been informed by their attorney that their record will be expunged after 3 years. And we say if their record's expunged, they don't have to report it. It's as though it didn't happen. And they've relied on their attorney, and it hasn't happened. And they vote, and they said, no, nothing happened, because they believe they didn't have a record. They run their fingerprints. We discover they have a record.
Mm.
And so on the face, it looks like they falsified their application. And then we talk to them, and they say, well, I talked to my attorney. They said I didn't. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or we may just discover that they have absolute out and right fraudulently tried to get away with something. And those are the ones the commission just mm-hmm. land on. So it's one of those situations where once you start looking at it, you realize which direction you need
mm-hmm.
to go.
That's very instructive. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions or comments? Representative Bates.
I wasn't going to bring this up in the committee, but I want, since you got you here now, I probably won't have a chance to ask again. Just in perusing this, it struck me that that smaller districts seem to have a significant...
stricter.
How do I put this?
Mm-hmm.
The stricter requirements. The big districts like Portland have very few, and I'm just wondering if it's because there's closer supervision in one, it's small communities, they know everybody. And it's sort of washed. I would like to see kind of a breakdown versus mm-hmm. the size of the district, the number of actual completed complaints of significance, you know, and see what's going on. I mean, it just strikes me looking at this that smaller districts seem to have one or two complaints that are significant. And I look through the whole thing, and maybe a half dozen for Portland as an example. And the population differences are huge in these two things. And I'm just wondering if a huge district like Portland, a lot of it doesn't get picked up. Or what's going on? It's kind of curious.
Representative Bates, that'd be an interesting study. We didn't have this data in this form till you asked us to do this. So we haven't been able to sort and study. And I was counting the blanks to the real ones as mm-hmm. you were, so I was waiting for you. But the family we dismiss. I think you've nailed it. In Portland, they have a fairly enormous HR office. A teacher who has done something, it has to get through the building, and from the building to the regional level, then to the HR office, and probably to us. The rules say the chief administrator is the one who has to report. There isn't an obligation that building principals report. In a very tiny community, if something goes wrong, everybody knows about it. And as you know, in Portland and Salem, although in Salem, you know, you mentioned the newspaper articles, we'll see those the same day. We won't see the Sutherland one for like 10 days when it comes in the news clipping. So Salem people are in trouble because our office is in their town and comes out in the paper. I mean, not really. Almost always there's a letter in our basket from the district reporting because they found out right before it was released or something. Mm. So great question. Good question to ask Portland for me.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't let Representative Bates outdo me here on this one.
We would not want that to happen.
Because I, too, was thinking, well, I don't want to ask that question today, but have you or could you break down and compile the complaints per district? And there might be a lot of information there that you could gather.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of wide variety of reasons of why some districts might have more complaints than others.
You know, mm-hmm.
The number of staff they have would be one of them, but it could point out a district that really needs to get their act together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would assume it would be a fairly simple thing just to sort on the school mm-hmm. district
mm-hmm.
column.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, there will be lots of fun things I can do with this town.
Could be differences in screening.
Have we closed our hearing on this issue? Oh. Have we closed our hearing on this issue?
Not yet.
Okay, I have another question afterwards.
Then go for it.
Well, do we need to pass that bill from yesterday?
Oh,
yeah.
We have. Yes.
So I asked if we closed our hearing.
Motion hanging out that we didn't
do.
It has to be tomorrow because of the 24-hour notice.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Smith. I forgot about that. So, are there any more issues related to these two bills? I will close the public hearing on House Bill 5054 or close the work session on House Bill 5054 and 5055 and adjourn this meeting, and we'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.